just said, good luck trying to come up with something to talk about tonight. And I know, it's, you know, we may wind up having a poetry slam or something just to come up with anything to knock down 3 hours of radio, right? Yeah. Yeah, I know. I'm watching both streams. By the way, now that we have both streams going, an announcement. Until Asa tells me otherwise, we're going to stream on both the Horn White Rose stream and Brother Deacon Asa's head-on.live stream, thereby adding a layer of redundancy in case one goes down, the other one will be up. If Asa tells me otherwise, I'll shut it down. But he tells me it's hot at 6:01. Okay, so let's see. Let's get some details out of the way. This program is live. It is the 19th day of May, 2017. And I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is The Horn. And I didn't realize, well, I've been trying to use Facebook and Twitter to let people know what was going on, but there were still people out there going, you've been gone since May the 8th. No, I haven't. But we did have a server decide to go, well, it went all Norwegian blue and decided to pine for the fjords. That's what it boils down to. So that explains that. Hopefully everybody's getting the stream. Although, I just got a Sylvia, write me back. You should have the stream without any problem. We're sending all over creation. Wait a minute. I missed a button. Huh. Isn't that interesting? Well, I said we were going to use two streams. It turns out we're not going to. For some reason or another, I can't send to the alternate stream. We'll sort that out over the weekend. But at any rate, here, we'll just stop that. Sorry, this is what happens when you run a radio show that has no production staff nearer to you than, say, 500 miles. But thanks to everybody for your patience in getting things back up and running. Just to let you know, I had some communication from Ben, and the regular White Rose podcasting will go back up as well. So you can do that too. Stuff will continue to be posted at Podbean. I mean, that's what I do at 9 o'clock every night. I post everything to White Rose, to iTunes via Thomas at FYI, and to Podbean. That takes about the first half hour after the program is over. Huh? No, it can't be. This is just weird. No. We can't be doing this. This is getting weirder by the minute. Asa tells me I'm listening on the alternate stream. The White Rose stream is playing classical music. Time out. I wonder if I've completely screwed myself up. It couldn't be. Hang on. I wonder if I've got them reversed. This will take just a minute. I'm sorry. Okay. Well, that sorts out one of the problems. I now know what one of the issues is. Try White Rose again. I think I'm streaming on White Rose now. I'm just not sure. I may have been in such a dither I may have been in such a dither to get everything shut down during the power outage last night that I, because, you know, hillbilly genius, I probably saved the streaming interfaces wrong. I think I'm streaming to White Rose now. Not sure. We'll have to just kind of wait and see. God damn it! Then why does it show that I'm streaming? Okay, let me... Okay. All right. Well, I'm pretty addled now. Thank you for letting me know, Sylvia, and Marty, and Asa. Okay, Les lets me know that I have you on TuneIn. Good. You know what would be fun? Staff. I mean, we have an all-volunteer staff. It's just... Okay, so it's Friday on the front porch. It is 9 minutes past the hour. And here in about, 50 minutes or so, we'll fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. And with any luck at all, we will have a rousing conversation. And I'm just, okay, just take a breath. Yeah, I'll just take a breath. One more sec. And then we'll get into things. Like I said, all of this flows out of me having to shut the studio down lickety-split because I get my electricity from a power company that is utterly, completely, totally, absolutely devoted to the idea of coal-fired electricity and sends it out on an ancient, antiquated, rickety-ass, half-maintained grid because they send all of their money to their shareholders and put it into their infrastructure, Appalachian Power. So when, at about 2 minutes until 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time yesterday, the power went out, interruptible power supplies, for which we have Randy to thank, being at once. It's kind of, I don't know, disturbing when it happens. And so at that point in time, I've got a checklist that I run in reverse, turning everything off that takes electricity in the studio, especially and particularly the computers, so that they don't just abruptly shut down, because I'm told that's not good for them. And so in the process of doing that, I screwed up the streams. And I have one more thing to fix. Stand by. This is for the purposes of the alternate recording that I just started. This is the 19th day of May, 2017. Thank you very kindly for your patience. All right, so it's about 13 past the hour, and those of you, if you happen to get this recording, have missed absolutely nothing. I wanted to mention something, and in fact, Asa had been significantly helpful yesterday in prospectively putting this together, but it didn't quite work out thanks to the fine folks at Appalachian Power. Yesterday was an anniversary of sorts, not the happy kind. Yesterday was the two-year anniversary of the passing of our dear friend, Bill, Mr. Stress, Miller. And I thought it appropriate, as did Asa, having mentioned it to me, to note his passing. Especially because of the fact that the goddess of irony decided to make herself manifest on that second anniversary. Because, of course, yesterday, all the world was abuzz with the passage into hell of Roger Ailes. Roger Ailes was a vicious, hateful, cruel, perverted, piss-poor example of a member of the human race. Among other things, he helped to pollute the body politic via Fox News such that this nation may never recover. But as I've kind of given the whole thing away, there was some irony involved. Because Roger Ailes died on the same day, 2 years after Bill, Mr. Stress Miller did. And as Bill told us, he had, in his heyday, when he was setting Cleveland on fire with his and his band's renditions of the blues, he had been hired once upon a time to blow harp on an ad for Roger Ailes, for which he was paid. And suffice to say that Mr. Stress wouldn't have peed on Roger Ailes had Roger Ailes been completely fully involved on fire. But when I realized that those two men died on the same day, two weeks apart, I thought, well, what more fitting tribute? Or what if there's an, you know, I'm literally agnostic on things like afterlife and religion generally. But it's moments like that, sheer coincidence, or perhaps, as, you know, Jung might have said, synchronicity, that make me wonder. Because it, you know, and not in the traditional, you know, great big bearded juvenile delinquent in the sky kind of thing, but more more of an animistic or ancestor worship kind of thing. That maybe after two years of having been, because, you know, Mr. Stress left us too early. Maybe he had some influence up there. If you've ever read Mark Twain's Captain Stormfield's account of a visit to heaven, you know that Twain envisioned a heaven where people were respected for what they were on earth and not necessarily what they were recognized as. I think he references a barber who for the genius of his poetry put Shakespeare and Homer both to shame. And those sorts of souls, I guess, had some influence with the eternal. And so I like the idea of Mr. Stress sort of nudging, you know, the angel of death in the ribs and say, well, you came for me 2 years ago. Isn't it about time you dealt with him? And you know, the angel of death going, not a bad idea. And bloop, just plucking Roger Ailes right off of planet Earth. Even as a host of lawsuits remain against him from all the women whom he abused, sexually harassed, intimidated, fired, because they didn't want to have anything resembling sex with a misanthrope as revolting as Roger Ailes. And so it is, thanks to Asa, a few minutes of the final call to the horn of Mr. Stress, Bill Miller, from May the 13th, 2015. I think we've got Bill. Hey, Bill.
How you doing, man?
Pretty good.
Yeah, well, you're right on the head with the stuff you were talking about, Catholicism, because I, as a young kid, I went through it pretty heavy. I mean, they dumped me in a Lord of the Flies Catholic children's home because my mother had an illness. And the only thing I learned out there was how to fight, how to play baseball, you know, and a few other things. But and some of those nuns we had were, there's nothing like a midlife person, you know, going through the menopause and never having used anything before, theoretically, never having used the situation to what we would consider normal, you know. And luckily for me, though, the priests we had were good people. They were, in fact, I used to steal beer out of their garage, the house they lived in. I'd steal a beer now and then. As a young kid, I was adventuresome. I had to try everything, you know. But it's so different today. It's there's a bunch that want to go back in time with the Catholic Church. I just, it's an abomination. There you go. There's a good biblical word for you, Bob. And I don't know, who is this character, by the way? Oh, Malachi Martin, you mentioned him. He used to be on the overnight show a lot. I don't know what world he was living in either. I think he was, didn't he cast out a lot of demons and things?
Honest to God, I don't know. You've heard of his name before. I haven't.
He was
a new one on me, Bill.
Well, I heard an awful lot of the all-night show when the guy from Pahrump, Nevada was running it. And, what does he believe in? The thing where you can see the future? You can come up with the future ideas? Because, just one of those things that...
Yeah, visionary?
Well, we had a church here that I went to, grade school church, down near the projects downtown. It's gone now. It's all Tri-C Community College bought that whole piece of land, And people down there were fighting to save the church, Bob, and it had a mysterious fire. We had a lot of mysterious fires in University Circle. Whatever UC University Circle Incorporated wanted and the people wouldn't sell, gee whiz, look at that, And the building right across from the Eagle Tavern had been a big factory, big Ford factory. They built the Ford Tri-Motors down there. Planes?
Yeah.
Because they were the ones that used to hop from Lake Erie out to the islands, And we had an old car museum that was still superb if you want to see some old metal. And my piano player and I were discussing the fact that both of us remembered there was some old lady in the neighborhood who drove a Baker Electric, Bob.
Holy cow.
They were a funny looking thing. But I saw, in fact, my piano player, he inherited a 1940 Chevy from his aunt when he was going to Cleveland Institute of Art. And he was a great Dixieland player, too, this guy. But he still is, for that matter. And because he's busy. This is graduation time down there at Case Western, and they have to bring the old man out of retirement because he used to run the whole photo establishment down there, so they have to call him out of retirement to come in. Here, they don't want to hire anybody, these companies today. They want to hire, for instance, they hired a whole bunch of, they got rid of all their cleaning staff and brought in some freelancers to clean the place. Bob, some of these people cleaned it all right. Ability to walk, office machines were walking. This is what you get when you hire a bunch of people who are not really employed by these companies. They pay them a lousy wage.
They're contract labor.
Yeah, contract labor. They used to have, they had no contract labor south of the Mason-Dixon line, didn't they, by the time?
I think that's one way of describing it.
My aides are all African-American women, and they're just shocked by how much I know about cultural stuff. And, I grew up it's really close to it. I talked to one of the guys in the neighborhood today. We were talking about what it was like growing up down there. Come to think of it, I'd rather have been, if I had gone to a suburban, lived in a suburban neighborhood, I would have been probably a history teacher of some kind or the other.
Yeah.
And been comfortably retired now. When you're talking about the Catholic Church, I saw that stuff so close. The old church before, who was it? Who was the one that made the big changes? Was it John the 23rd?
Yeah. You're talking about Vatican II?
Yeah. And of course, the one we had, the German anti-aircraft gunner.
Yeah, Benny the Rat.
But on the other hand, as far as he's concerned in Nazism, you have to understand a little bit about the Hitler Youth movement. And where, like my buddy whose father was a submariner for the Germans, he told his son, he said, look, it was either that, join the sub service, or go now. That's a decision for you, Bob.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
And of course, the explanation that was given, Bill, when he when Benny the Rat was elevated to the throne of St. Peter was that, he was just a kid and everybody had to be a member of the Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
So
we talk about popes with Pius the 12th, who was pope when I was a little one. There was something with him and Hitler and Jews. Yeah, he was involved in some things that were shady.
Well, an enabler.
Yeah, of course. I suppose with Uncle Adolf, there wasn't much you could do one way or the other. But yeah, you hit it right on the head tonight with it, because it was a religion. It should not be a lifestyle. My grandmother, my mother's mother, quit the Roman Catholic Church, pulled her kids out of school because the local guy, the local Monsignor or whatever he was always berating the people for how much money he wasn't getting from them. And my grandmother said, hell with that. My grandmother was the one that my mother said sat in cried when the news of the Holocaust hit. She had fled Germany in around 1900. This was 1945, you know. She was dead before. Died in 47 to 48. Uremic poisoning.
Ooh.
Not a good
nope.
kidney. Well,
yeah.
That killed one of Clark Gable's wives. Died from the same thing. But I'll tell you about these old radio shows. You get a look at how people were thinking. And one of them, they talked about Lebanon, the capital of Lebanon.
Beirut.
They called it Beirut
yeah.
in those days.
Yeah.
Amazing how things change. But I won't call up the line. But, yeah, I mean, I know our friend from your neighbor. He's a good Catholic. But, you know, I was not a believer after so many years. And the whole, you know, the only time you see me in church anymore is when there's a box in the middle of the, with one of my relatives laying in it. Except they are all there by now. I would be next if I believed in that. But first of all, I can't afford it. You know, it's you want to talk, well, what was the life of Riley? There was a character, Digby O'Dell, otherwise known as Bendix used to call him Digger. Digger O'Dell was a friendly undertaker. And whenever his bit was ended, this undertaker, he would say his exit line was, I'll use his exit line. I must be shoveling off. Stay out of trouble. Enjoy the rest of the evening. I know I'll have my ears plastered to the headphones because I keep it as quiet as I can in this place. In fact, I'm trying now to get an amplifier set up so I can play a little bit more because I miss the hell out of playing the damn thing. Ruined my life, but at the same time, it made my life, so it's like a microphone that you sit behind and talk. And you had some connections with somebody from Sun Records, didn't you?
Sam Phillips owned Big River Broadcast.
Yeah.
And I worked for Big River
Broadcast. The guy that owned Sun owned a record, owned some stations, too, I think.
A bunch of, several stations. I don't know if it would qualify as a bunch.
Because he was before he was a big rockabilly guy, he was a big, big blues record producer. And one of his guys was, Ike Turner was a player and a scout for Sun. He brought a lot of people into Sun Records, and you know, it was a big label in his day. And of course, RCA made him. They paid him a fortune for Elvis Presley's contract. Because Elvis was on Sun. Jerry Lee Lewis was on Sun.
Carl Perkins
was on Sun. Yeah, Bob, I can remember when that stuff hit the radio, and I'm going, "What is this stuff?" The other thing is the crime novels. I'm working on a Hammett, and this guy was so ahead of the game as far as the social fabric. I guess when you work for the Pinkertons yourself, you saw it up close and personal. And the Continental Op was based on the guy who ran the Baltimore branch of Pinkertons when Hammett joined. Hammett's nickname was the Shadow Man. They say that Hammett could follow a drop of water from San Francisco to China and never lose sight of it. So with that little bit of written wisdom, I'll let you go.
All right, Bill, you have yourself a good evening. We'll talk soon.
Bye now.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. You'll pardon me if I get a little choked up. That line, the only time I show up in church anymore is when somebody's in a box and I'd be next if I could afford it. Well, 5 days later and 3 days after his last appearance on the horn, Friday on the Front Porch from May the 15th, 2015, he was gone from us. But pure, pure genius. And lo and behold, Roger Ailes and Bill Miller were both born in Ohio, or from Ohio. They were both born in 1940. Hey, Bill, if you've got that much stroke up there, out there, over there, where there, speak kindly of me when you speak, my friend. So, I felt like that was worth sharing. Wow. And that's just a sort of standalone thing. Goodbye, Roger Ailes. What a shame that we can't put you in a toxic waste barrel and drop you to the bottom of the Mariana Trench. You know, when the 6 foot tall race of sentient cockroaches who will worship us as gods look back upon us a million or two million years hence, they'll probably think that Roger Ailes was some sort of demon, or demi-demon in service to the great presence of evil that still is, and God only knows why, Rupert Murdoch. Glory call, Rupert, glory call. And in the 24 hours that have passed since the ancient rickety craptastic coal-fried power grid went out here, everything that I might have thought about cheating into the program from last night, you know, has gone stale. Because we used to bitch about the 24-hour news cycle. God damn, I don't even know if it's an hour news cycle anymore. It's moving that quickly. Yesterday was interesting enough. But today, boom, new revelations. And not small revelations. Marcus Aurelius got on Air Force One along with Melanoma, who has probably been looking forward to this trip like a dose of the clap. And they're gone abroad on his first trip, and what a trip it's going to be. Israel, Saudi Arabia, among other places. And we've learned things about the trip. For instance, when it comes to hospitality, you know, hospitality to a guest is written into the Quran. So when he gets to Riyadh to visit with our friends, our partners in peace, the royal house of Ibn Saud and whoever it is that is at present the serene, noble, majestic graciousness of that gang of thugs. Well, they're putting on the dog. Well, the camel, really. No. Camel is a delicacy in Saudi Arabia. Tender young camel. And, he did it again. 6:34 p.m. Bob Kincaid, Little Ray of Sunshine, just ruined dinner for at least two or three people. But, come on, you'd do it. You'd taste camel, wouldn't you? But they're not doing camel. It's gonna be lamb. And it's going to be... a lot of rice and... Yeah, typical spread, and not shabby. All the, there'll probably be 50 gallon buckets of hummus and tabbouleh and who knows, sauces. But because they're featuring the septuagenarian version of a 3-year-old. The chefs for his serene, majestic, royal, noble graciousness have had to learn on the double quick how to ruin a piece of steak and find out what the hell ketchup is. I'm not kidding. It's a state dinner. The flowing robes, the majesty, all of that. And Melanoma will be reaching over and cutting up a piece of beef that has been turned into shoe leather and buried in a bloody mound of ketchup for the President of the United States. Damn. I know, food snobs, right? We got no, yeah. But still. And while there, he's also going to, and I don't know exactly how this would work. Because I've actually read the Quran cover to cover. And I have a working enough fascination with history to try to have some knowledge, but it is not nearly what I would consider to be sufficient of both Islam and the Arabic peoples of the Arabian Peninsula, the various and sundry tribes, the spread of Islam across the Near East and the Far East, the effects of the waves of fundamentalism that periodically sweep through through Islam. With some study, I think I could probably speak with a little bit of at least coherence, if not authority, on the topic. But if you can imagine, and this is not a joke, this is not something from The Onion, Comrade Kumquat is going to deliver what is being described as a major speech on Islam while in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. National Security Advisor and known liar, H.R. McMaster, said, the speech is intended to unite the broader Muslim world against common enemies of all civilization and to demonstrate America's commitment to our Muslim partners. You know, I think that commitment was demonstrated pretty goddamn well with the Muslim ban, versions 1 and 2. Neither of which ever really got out of beta. Clarity noting, the spread of Islam? Why hummus? Now you know. Time out. Yeah, cowbell for clarity. I'm sort of not looking forward to this speech. Probably about a 9-hour time differential between us and them. So I'm not sure when it will be delivered. There will probably, almost certainly, be video of it, if, of course, His Serene, Noble, Majestic, Royal, High Graciousness doesn't have the journalists beheaded before they can get the video out of the country. Yeah, this is going to be a hoot. Because the speech, we are told, is being written by Stephen Miller, who, of course, was one of the primary architects of the Muslim ban. When he was a student back at Duke University, Stephen Miller said, Islamic terrorists have declared a death sentence on every man, woman, and child living in this country. All righty then. And he's also a known fellow traveler with David Horowitz's Freedom Center. Southern Poverty Law Center lists the Freedom Center, the David Horowitz Freedom Center, as an anti-Muslim hate group. You know, only because it is. But, you know, the serene, majestic, royal, high graciousness won't much care, because I think we're probably going to sell them a shit ton of weapons that they can use to continue bombing the living bee Allah out of men and women and little children in Yemen. Because, after all, they are our Partners in Peace. Right? Yeah. But again, it could be that it'll all go just fine. Right? I mean, you're running right off to your local betting parlor to put... Yeah, me neither. Yeah, by the way, racist Bannon is on the plane, Trump. It is known for going around saying that the Judeo-Christian West is the beginning of stages of a global war against Islamic fascism, which is the most radical religion. Can I take a moment, please, just to point something out? At history, not a single event moving through time, but at as multiple moving at their own paces through time. You know the hissies that we have about Islam? Well, not we, but I mean the right wing, evil bastards. Do you know what? Okay, so let's start with Christianity versus Islam. Christianity roughly gets its beginning with the perceived or actual, nobody really knows, life of Yeshua, the Palestinian day laborer and itinerant semi-literate rabbi, which is about 2,000 years ago. Islam comes along 6 centuries later. Now, by the time, so that makes Islam roughly 1,400 years old right now. Would you care to guess what Christianity was like in 1,400 of the Common Era? It was wall-to-wall theocracy. Wall-to-wall ideological authoritarian dictatorship. Everybody in Western Europe was Roman Catholic. The Roman Catholic Church had gone through a series of purges and massacres, and still had some in front of them yet to do. Had perpetrated the various and sundry pogroms against Jews in the entirety of Europe, and it was nothing in France, in England, in the petty principalities of Germany, in the so-called Holy Roman Empire, in the city-states of Italy, Spain, at least what part of it was actually Christian. Anywhere, the Netherlands, and then there were the Teutonic Knights who periodically wandered up into Lithuania and just slaughtered the shit out of people under the guise of converting them to Christianity and saving their souls. It was nothing to walk into any town of any size, and they didn't have a sign on the outskirts saying, "Welcome to Rouen. We hope you enjoy your stay." "Welcome to Trier. If you lived here, you'd be home." No, 1,400 years after the institution of Christianity, when you walked, most likely walked, into a town, the first thing you would see is 5 or 6 or a dozen or 100, depending on the local political and religious climate, heads and parts of bodies sort of hanging around as a general reminder not to commit blasphemy and not to piss off the prince. You know, crows kind of hanging around if they were fresh and picking out eyeballs. And, well, I guess we're not going to have any grapes in the fruit cup at dinner tonight. And just the entrails just sort of a little ray of sunshine. I am. And I always remember that whenever I see a picture of some poor person getting their head hacked off in some public square over there in the kingdom of our partners in peace, Saudi Arabia. It makes me wonder what Islam will be like in 600 years. And it makes me wonder what Christianity will be like in 600 years. Because, of course, the granddaddy of them all, whatever it is that gave rise to Hinduism, is significantly different than... But, you know, they're still out there periodically slaughtering people who need a good slaughtering, even if, you know, but they're... Well, we may be vegetarians, but we're not pacifists, right? Todd, good Todd in South Carolina, are you going to be kind enough to give us a primer on Islam versus the Crusades? Just wondering. Yeah, I don't really think we've got time for that because there's only 13 minutes or so before we start Friday on the front porch. But I can go so far as to say that any time that a Christian, or especially a right-wing, Bible-believing, upstanding, God-centered, Christ-centered evangelical starts pontificating about Islam, the one thing that you know immediately is that they know nothing about the faith that they profess to follow. Because there is no bloodier faith. There is no faith that has spilled more blood in a similar amount of time that even comes close to matching Christianity. I mean, good God. You know, when they landed in Mexico, the good Spanish Christians, oh my God, they're committing human sacrifice. No shit. Have you seen what's going on in Madrid lately? Right. And it is with this backdrop that the most incurious man ever to occupy the White House, a 4-year-old in a 70-year-old's body, is going to presume to lecture every Muslim on earth about the need to be civilized and peaceful. Oh, by the way, when the car careened out of control in Times Square yesterday, killing one and injuring, what, 20? Good God, the white-wing media, before the wheels had stopped spinning, they had their hands down their pants, masturbating furiously in joyful anticipation that it was going to be a Muslim terrorist attack right in New York City. Of course, it was proven just to be a drunken asshole who has subsequently been charged with second-degree murder. Oh, but they wanted it to be a Muslim terrorist, didn't they? Yeah, they did. And just one last thought from off in the weeds of history. I can't help myself. This just happens. But if nothing else, I like the perspective. And I hope you do too. I saw the video of Tangerine Tiberius. And I read talking about how he's the victim of a witch hunt. And I've seen the various moments when it looks like the doorbell's ringing, but no one's there to answer it in his mind. And I thought about history. And I thought about another 70-year-old. That 70-year-old's name was Gaius Marius. Gaius Marius was born in 157 BCE. And at that point in time in the Roman Republic, it was traditional that if you made it all the way to the consulship, you had made it as far as you could go, and then you took your proconsulship in one of the provinces, and you went and cleaned it out and made yourself extremely wealthy, and came home and retired and sat in the Senate, if the Senate didn't decide to put you on trial. You know, the other faction. Well, Gaius Marius rose up as a general, climbed the cursus honorum, the course of honor. And unlike other consuls, was not content to be consul once. In fact, he went on to be consul 7 times. And in his 7th consulship, which lasted, 13, 18 days, all hell broke loose because Marius had lost his mind. Yeah, he died on January 13th, 86 BCE, 17 days into his 7th consulship. Each consulship being a year in length. And he spent most of his career trying to keep the people of the Roman Republic terrified that one of those days they were just going to wake up and the Gauls were going to be running all over Rome, putting everybody to the sword and raping the women first. And he had been, in his younger years, quite a brilliant man. But while, and this is my point, while most people know about, at least, you know, they recognize the name, Julius Caesar, maybe Caesar Augustus, because him's in the Bible. Well, they don't know who Marius was. Marius was, in fact, the uncle of Gaius Julius Caesar. And he was married to Caesar's daddy's sister, Julia. But in the chaos that he wrought, well, let's put it this way. It was not Caesar and the civil wars with Pompey that brought about the end of the Republic. It was not Antony versus Octavian that brought about the end of the Republic. It was, in fact, Marius, who was so mad by the time he achieved his 7th consulship, and he felt like he had to have a 7th consulship because he had been, a soothsayer had told him that she had had a vision of an eagle in a nest with 7 chicks, and interpreted that to mean that Marius would be consul seven times, which was simply unthinkable. But it was sufficient to drive him, if we believe this kind of thing, to pursue those seven consulships. The historian Plutarch tells us that at one point in time, late in life, 70th year, Marius cracked up and started telling people that he was commander of the general, the commanding general in the Mithridatic War, named after Mithridates, the king of Pontus, up on the Black Sea. And began marching about and issuing orders and acting all generally. And ultimately, for the first time in Roman history, a man named Sulla marched on Rome to rid Rome of Marius. And then, having taken control, had himself declared dictator, and issued what are called proscriptions, which were a legalized form of putting a bounty on anybody he didn't like. And the people he didn't like were rich people who were his political opponents, whose estates he then seized in the name of Rome, and kept pretty much for himself. That set the stage for the civil wars that would come later. And once the idea of marching on Rome had been, once that taboo had been breached, hell, everybody who had any ambition at all wound up marching on Rome. It became sort of a thing that you kind of had to do if you wanted to be an autocratic ruler. And I say this because I've been thinking, and I had a conversation with Michael in Madison, and I think he was trying to attend the Soundgarden concert tonight that was going to go forward without Chris Cornell. And I think, if I saw his post correctly, then the stadium was cleared because of lightning or some such. Tough night. In the process of getting rid of Marius, the Roman Republic died. And I'm not saying this is a one-to-one analog. But it is interesting enough to make us wonder about what will happen to the United States if we ever get to the point where it becomes necessary, and I would argue that it is already well past necessary, to remove this madman from office. Because, see, we've never had to do that. That's a stress test that the Constitution of the United States has never endured. The process was put in place by the framers. But the closest we ever got was the Senate trial of Andrew Johnson, which really was a political witch hunt. The Republicans were mad at him because he was going soft on the South in the wake of the Civil War. So and Nixon had the common decency, if to the extent that you can use that phrase in the same sentence with Nixon, to resign so he wouldn't have to be removed from office. Clinton was never going to be convicted. But when we look at the steady stream of details coming out about this bedlam presidency, you can't help but ask yourself, okay, the House impeaches. The Senate tries him. The Senate convicts. And then issues an order saying, Donald Trump, you are hereby removed from office. You're not president anymore. And maybe Trump, and maybe Mike Pencilneck Geek goes too, because he's in it up to his helmeted white hair. What happens if Trump says, I ain't going? Remember what Andrew Jackson said about the Supreme Court order striking down the Indian Removal Act? Justice Marshall has made his order. Now let him enforce it, and went ahead instead with the genocide of the native peoples of the southeast of the United States, the Trail of Tears, all of that. Remember that? Who removes, because it's not clear in the Constitution, who removes an impeached, convicted president? Who, by the way, happens to be the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. Which, by the way, happens to be up to its eyebrows in evangelical, fundamentalist, ammosexuals who really wouldn't mind getting some shit going if they thought it would bring back Jeebus. Might as well think about this now and see if we can come to any conclusions. Robert Mueller's investigation could take years. The re-election campaign of Donald Trump could still be going on while Mueller is still investigating. And one of the more telling aspects of the Congress was something that was said by Lindsey Graham, who set down his julep down there at the ancestral estate of Smoldering Chode down in South Carolina, and said, this significantly curtails the ability of the Congress to investigate anything, which could not have made him happier, or Paul Ryan, or Mitch McConnell, because, oh, well, we've got a special prosecutor now. Why bother? Let's get Mikey. Let's get Bobby. He'll investigate it. He'll investigate anything. Hey, Bobby. Yes, Devin. Devin noting Marius, Mar-a-Lago. Coincidence? I think not. The goddess of irony works in mysterious ways. And we still haven't touched upon the news of today. No, I'm going to wait for the Friday on the Front Porch group to do that, because it's about time we got that started. A reminder, if you've never participated in Friday on the Front Porch, well, it's easy enough to do. You get on Skype, you send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, SparkyDunc, one word, and he'll show you the breadcrumb trail and show you how to get into the conversation. If you've never been, a part of it, it's quite fun, and I heartily invite you to join in. So, that pretty much closes the filibobster for this Friday, the 19th day of May, 2017. I have no doubt that we will have scintillating conversation over the next couple of hours, because of all the technical hullabaloo that went with getting the program started. Now, I didn't mention fundraising. May's been tough, but it could be a lot worse were it not for the people who have helped out so immensely thus far, and as well as our subscribers. Thank you, one and all. So, where do we stand this evening? In order to finish the week and keep May on track, $460. $200 tonight, $200 from last night, you know, because it's all predicated on being on the air, but you know, weren't. Thanks, Appalachian Power. And $60 left over from Wednesday, Tuesday, Monday. Matters not how or how much, but it would be great to close the week not down 460, because that means more, and Monday would be down 660, and that's perilously close to 666. And, well, you know, $460. If you want to help out, go over to headonradionetwork.com, click on contribute. There's a box there if you'd like to become a subscriber. And golly Moses, we need one of these days, 400 subscribers, and all of this subscription or all of this fundraising talk, most of it just goes away. But if you don't want to, don't click the box and just help out this evening. No challenges on the table or anything like that. Just we need to raise $460. So that having been said, I'll take a break, during which time we will fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. And thank you. Thank you kindly, Ralphs. $25 challenge to get us all started. Your 10 will become 20, your 5 will become 10, your 25 will become 50. And that will take us down to only $410 to go. Thank you, Ralphs. Thank you very, very, very kindly. Alrighty then. Since I started with Mr. Stress, let's finish the hour with Mr. Stress. Shall we? Do let's. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Oh, that was downright refreshing, wasn't it? Stagger Lee. And Bill, Mr. Stress Miller with the Alan Green Band. There is lots of Mr. Stress on YouTube if you're inclined to go and just set up a playlist. And man, it's great. Great music for a Friday night. Thank you very kindly to Brother Deacon Asa, who jumped out there and met Ralph's challenge, so we're off and running. Thank you to James for taking us down to $405 to go round out the week. Thank you very kindly. Much, much appreciated, James. Thank you very, very much indeed. Let's Skype group and check in with Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, bud.
Too damn hot in the man cave, huh? No space folding.
I just decided it was getting that way. When that ready, it's going to be 102, so it's already here.
So you're going to have to fold space to somewhere else in the house.
Yeah, I'm at the original Skype command tonight.
Yeah, okay. We've made it through the week, all but an hour and fourths of it. So at this point in time, that feels like a win. I don't know about you, but it does. Oh God, I was so damn mad last night. I mean, I know I'm supposed to have a night end sort of approach to everything with. You can't do anything about it. Power's out. What the hell?
But if with your system, you never know how long it's going to be out.
Well, see, that's the thing that just freaked me right the hell out. Because, see, the last time when we were down for 7 days, the problem was on out my road out in the wilds of the canyon of the Gauley River. And I was outside yesterday because otherwise, you know, sit in the dark and scream at candles or whatever. I forget what it did. Better to scream at candles than anyway. And lo and behold, I saw an Appalachian power truck going out my road, a repair truck. And I thought, you sons of bitches. And you made a joke about this when I said it earlier. But knowing how Appalachian power is, what they did is when we were down for 7 days, they went out and they put a Band-Aid on something out there, and the Band-Aid has fallen off. And it took them up into the wee small hours of the morning to get us going again because crappy infrastructure. But I still stand by my theory because it wiped out the little town down the road from me. It's weird. It's weird when the power goes out in, you know, the modern age because there's no lights and it just looks like something creepy has happened. But that was my general feeling. So I took it out on grass. And not in a happy way. I fired up the weed eater and ran the weed eater for about 2 hours. And it was at least, you know, moderately satisfying. And then of course, because this is how you know the real spirit realm works. The rain god is encouraged by the smell of two cycle engine smoke. So naturally, it just freaking poured last night and poured down again today. And I was hoping to do some more weed eating, but it just didn't happen. So that's. If we get any kind of a break over the weekend, I mean, I find running the weed eater to be kind of relaxing. But no, it's not looking good. Thunderstorms tomorrow and Sundays, and we don't see the sun again until a week from tonight. Welcome to Hillbilly Monsoon season.
So you could lose your power again.
Oh, easy.
Mm-hmm. The one thing I can't say anything bad about Pacific Graft and Extortion because we have a smart grid here and they know exactly where the power goes down at. They get it back up fairly quick.
Well, every time this happens, I think I got to figure out some way to get some solar panels. The struggles are what the struggles are. So, But hey, we're $5 away from only having $400 to go. So that's a great idea. That's a great step forward.
Well, you could have Friday on Front Porch Miracle, you know.
They have happened from time to time.
Yeah.
And it would be great if it did.
Hey, you want to hear a rat update?
Oh, do please. You electrocuted one, didn't you? Since we're talking about electricity.
Several of them now. I'm up to three on the second litter of Donetta's baby rats.
Jesus.
They enter the tube. Once they enter the tube, they don't come out.
Don't go into the tube. Don't.
Yeah, but they're after the peanut butter.
Bacon grease never really took, did it?
The one trap I put it on, the son of a gun set it off without even getting caught. Now, it was a plastic trap my friend gave me. I got that one set again. I went and bought last time I was in Farm Supply, I bought a regular wooden trap. I have that set. And then we got the live catch cage with mouse traps on either end of it and bait in the middle. In case the big rat gets in there. But so far, no good. But the little tube's working great. I think so I'm up to eight babies now that I've caught, trapped, or electrocuted.
Murderer.
Yeah, but they're smaller this time, so I think they're the second litter.
Sparky and the War on the Vermin.
Yeah, hopefully they'll move out when it gets really hot.
Oh, they might like that.
I don't know where they're getting frickin' water. They got to go out to get water. Well, they can and the pasture's all flooded right at the moment.
Well, maybe that's what drove them toward you.
No. They were here before that. They were here months ago. The rain drove me in here, I guess. I don't know. A friend of mine said they're up bad all over town this year. They even got into his boat and ate up the wiring on it.
Oh, that had to make him really happy.
Yeah. It's just another thing he has to fix. He can't deal with time because he's an old Vietnam vet that I've known. Not a friend of the family that we've known for years and years and years. And he was stove up with back problems. He's going to the VA and stuff. He loves Obama, man, because Obama gave him some good VA disability a couple years ago.
Thanks, Obama.
He got the Agent Orange thing from being in country. Finally, so he got a pretty good pension out of the VA, disability payment.
And then got his wiring eaten by, yes.
Yeah, well, he's not hurt otherwise.
Yeah. Well, let's check in and see what's going on around the room. Jeremy hasn't been part of the group in a while. Hey, Jeremy.
Long time.
Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, there he is. What's happening, Jeremy?
Not too much. Just another night of work. So I'm here joining in while I work. It was 92 here yesterday and 91 the day before. It's 57 here today. So
yeah, I had a call from somebody in Boston who said it was like 98 degrees there yesterday. What the hell's going on?
It's not global warming. That doesn't exist. It's a Chinese hoax.
Speaking of which, and I know you're familiar with Penn and Teller, right?
Oh, yeah, I love Penn for various reasons, but yeah.
And of course, they're notorious libertarians.
Yep.
Well, and I hate to give them any free press or anything. Not that they need it from a, you know, pissant like me. But I have it in my desperate attempt to find something to because this is the category now. Find something to watch that wouldn't particularly interest Agnes, because you know, married life. Because she's still over with the grandkids. Well, I ran across their Showtime series Bullshit on Amazon Prime. And my pink little ears perked up when I saw that there was a segment on environmentalists. And so I sat and watched it. And the funny thing is, I was all prepared to be, you're libertarian assholes. It'll all be so much better if we all just pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and live the life of the lone wolf and blah, 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 libertarian bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. All right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, if you didn't understand that you were being propagandized, you might fall for this lock, stock, and barrel. As it was, I picked out the bullshit from the real gleanings. But for those who have heard the frustration that I've manifested with Big Greens on this program from time to time, there was a certain resonance to it, and it might make for an interesting conversation. Do you have access to Amazon Prime, Jeremy?
I have access to Showtime, HBO, and Starz, so I'm not worried about Prime.
Okay, so if you get a minute, watch that episode of Penn & Teller's Bullshit, because they set out to make the environmental movement look like a bunch of hippy dippy assholes. And the problem is the people in the movement helped them. And I watched it and I was like, I'm going to show this. I'm going to watch this with Agnes again. Because she's going to go, we know those people, don't we? And one of the centerpieces of the whole thing, not to ruin anything, is that they send an earnest-seeming campaigner with a petition clipboard to walk among the many and get them to sign a petition to ban dihydromonoxide.
Yeah.
And that's an old old joke, but it apparently works on the Atne Ute Aitbre. Oh, by the way, go ahead.
That's a sensory cycle joke from the old Baxter. So, the old sign off on not liking oxygen, basically joke doesn't work anymore. So,
right. By the way, Sparky, you've got Devin's got a chant going now. Exterminate! 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 And Devin remembers Treebeard and Celery. Oh, they were there, Devin. They were there.
What's Treebeard and Celery?
Oh, they show up, they're first cousins of Brad and Melissa Shithead, who, are so into it, they don't know fact. It's like, dude, we've got to save the planet. And don't know diddly. Just kind of are there for the party, there to be joiners. It's propaganda for the libertarian position that we should just go ahead and burn up everything, blow up everything, and do anything we can to make a nickel and, devil take the hindmost. They use logging as their central focus because it was easier to do it with logging than it was to, say, do it with poisoning hillbillies with mountaintop removal. But I'm sure that'd be fine with them, too, because, they're libertarians.
As far as Penn Jillette goes, I will give him credit in a couple small areas. He's a staunch disliker of Trump because he was on The Apprentice for at least one or two seasons. He says Trump's just as awful in real life as he is on TV. And he also is a staunch atheist.
Yeah, no, I give credit where it's due. He also has no patience for anti-vaxxers.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Which earns which earns a little bit of cred too.
He actually has his I won't mention what it is, but he has his own podcast on the Podcast One Network, and I listen to it often just to hear his point of view on a couple of things. Even though he's a libertarian whack most of the time, some of it's funny. I mean, like, he told a story about one time. Obviously, he lives in Vegas with Teller, and the joke is that if nobody knows who they are, Teller doesn't talk. No matter what you say, he acts like a mime. But outside of that character, in real life, he's quite vocal. But he told a joke about one time that he was at some special picture on a wall somewhere, and he wanted to take a picture of his kids. So he stood up against the wall and asked this guy, hey, can you take a picture of these kids with me and something like that? And the guy said, sure. Took like 12 shots. Then some guy ran up out of nowhere and said, okay, get the kids out of here. My turn, thinking they were just celeb hogs.
Yeah, he's a classy piece of work.
Right.
Without a doubt. Nice photograph, Kitty. Nice photograph. I can feel the breeze just looking at it. Just got a note from Kitty in Boston. Sitting on a beach right now listening to the program. We've had three straight days of mid-80s here. Scary, but the sand sure does feel nice under my feet. I'll bet it does, and I saw the photo. It's one of those New England beaches that's just littered with bleached giant clam shells and scallop shells and stuff. My wife would get a bag and take home like 3 tons if she could. Enjoy, Kitty, because it is unseasonable. And thanks to Frank and thanks to Sylvia, we are down to 365 to go. And that is very, very helpful. Maybe we're on our way to a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. Who knows? Thank you, Frank, and thank you, Sylvia. Randy with a note. Once the cold front comes through overnight, we here at the northern Delaware state line are supposed to have highs in the high 60s and cloudy for the weekend. Yeah, my cousin and her husband live in the suburbs of Boston, and according to my weather widget for Arlington, Mass., it's topped out in the high 90s for the past few days. And I guess, folks up there probably aren't griping about it. It's kind of probably novel, only it won't be. Eventually, it'll be, Tuesday. So you got that. Let's run over and check in with Billable Rick. Assuming Billable Rick is here.
I am. Hello.
Okay, good. I didn't know if you were billing at the moment.
Well, I am. Let me turn off the clock here. I can't charge you guys here. Yeah, so, yeah, anyway, I guess a friend of mine is in Boston, and she's there for her her youngest daughter is graduating from Boston University. Actually, her only daughter is graduating from Boston University, and she said it was like 90 yesterday. So, yeah, it's unseasonably warm for them back east. And I remember until like about a week ago, I mean, it was like in the, they were having baseball games like in the 30s and 40s there.
Yeah.
As well as in Chicago, you know? So they really didn't have a spring from what it sounds like, you know? In more of a, long, winter or whatever. It was more like fall.
Well, our early spring just sucked. We got up to 80 we got a couple of 80 degrees days in February, and then March was just brutal.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, you guys had some snowstorms as recently as what? Two weeks ago?
Oh yeah, we had a few snowflakes fly. Nothing stuck, but yeah.
Oh okay. Yeah, but it's been fairly cool here in California until recently. There was one night when my son wanted me to turn the heat on in the house. I said, oh, come on, it's not that bad, But I think it's finally going to warm up a little bit anyway, But, I guess as far as...
getting hotter in D.C.
Oh, I'm sure it is. Oh, I got to get my bird to be quiet here. And Punky's not even in the room. Yeah. What is it in D.C.? It's 98? Is that what I heard?
That wasn't what I meant. Breaking news as of a few minutes ago, it has been announced that James Comey, and all I could see in the email side of it before I opened it was breaking news, James Comey, the four dot, dot, dot. And I'm thinking, I'm going to open this up, and it's going to say he's died in a small plane crash.
Oh, no.
No, no. He's agreed to publicly testify before the Senate Intelligence Committee sometime after Memorial Day.
Okay, okay. Well, you know, he has basically cooked Donald Trump, I think, with his memos, where Trump is trying to get him to, you know, end the investigation of Flynn, basically, you know, not even basically, you know, exactly, you know. And, I mean, that clearly is obstruction of justice. And then what he was recorded as earlier today, the news broke, I guess there was a translation of what was said to the Russians.
Yeah, wasn't that lovely?
Yeah. And that was the actual, that was the White House, you know, that was an actual official White House, you know, source as well. So, you know, do you have that handy? I don't know if folks have heard it.
Oh, yeah, I hadn't mentioned it. I was waiting for us to deal with it on the front porch here. In speaking with his owners, Kislyak and Lavrov, well, okay, they're handlers. The owner's Putin.
Yeah.
Trump said to them, I got rid of Comey. He's a total nutcase, so that won't be a problem anymore. I'm not under investigation.
Jeez.
The simple son of a bitch actually thought that by firing the FBI director, he would end the investigation.
Yeah.
And you know, we talked a little bit about why is Rod Rosenstein involved when all this stuff started breaking. Rod Rosenstein is beginning to feel a little bit of hot breath on his neck.
Mm-hmm.
No. I already knew that Comey was going to be fired. I just had to write the memo. Oh, really? And that came out in his little gaggle with the Senate yesterday.
Yeah, that just sort of undercuts Trump's, you know, claim that he relied on the memo from Rosenstein. You know?
Right, and it supports Trump's statement. Oh no, I knew I was going to fire him all along.
Right.
I'd known that for some. Yeah, I had to, because you know he's a nutcase.
Yeah.
But one of the things that's been interesting today, Rick and everybody, is they've gotten this this report from a friend of Comey's who said he was very, very uncomfortable being in the Oval Office there for that one ceremony where everybody got a handshake and a hug.
Right.
And he talked about how he was wearing a blue suit and he was trying to fade into the blue curtain so he wouldn't have to come up and kiss the ring.
Right. Yeah.
And so all the for-profit media have mentioned that today. But you know what they've left go?
What's that?
The fact that you can very clearly see in the video that Trump smooches at him, he kisses at him when he calls him forward.
Hmm. Yeah.
Go and watch it. It's there, Steve. You've seen it, haven't you?
I've seen it. It's sickening.
Yes, Bob.
Because I mean, he puckers up and he sticks those cat's ass lips way out, so that it's obvious what he's doing.
And Bob, since you brought me in, I've got a question for Billable Rick, if you don't mind.
Not at all.
And I hate to jump in out of turn here.
No. But, you're not out of turn. There are no turns here.
Okay. All right.
You were addressed by Bob. So anyway, even if there's
okay,
it's your turn.
All right. All right, we'll start the meter, Rick, but I got a question for you. I've been, like Bob, I have a guilty pleasure. One of mine is listening to Washington Journal. And I don't know why I do it. Same reason Bob listens to Slant Eye and the Meat Puppet, I guess.
Okay.
But all the rubes keep saying, oh, if Comey had a memo, why'd he keep sitting on it? Why'd he just out it? Well,
yeah.
Damn, man. he's building a case. You wouldn't show your ace card when you're trying to build a case, would you?
No, of course not. I mean, you know, just one particular conversation, you know, hey, you know, this guy's a good guy. You know, you should consider just dropping the investigation, something like that. Just one time is one thing, but Trump kept at it. So, you know, the second time, the third time, it's like, okay, after a while. And then he fires him when he realizes that he's not going to drop it.
And I've also heard, oh, it's just a memo. How is that valid? Well, most tickets, most police reports, I'm in the insurance industry, okay?
That is
basically a memo, correct?
Yes, it's basically your past recollection recorded. It has to be recorded fairly close in time to when the events occurred, and it's sort of a sort. It's a type of you know, like a business record almost, or an official record of what happened.
Yeah, and that's yeah, and that's why when you're creating one of these things, you put date and time on it,
right?
And place and persons present. You know,
it's totally admissible, no matter what the rubes on Washington Journal. You know, say otherwise, correct?
Well, yeah, those folks are morons, Steve. So
I got to give that up. Bob, are you going to give up a slant eye and the meat puppet, or
no, squint and the meat puppet?
Okay, all right. Sorry.
No, I have to be up every morning at 6 o'clock and sometimes 4:30. So no, that's going to remain my filthy little habit.
And I didn't mean it. I didn't mean a slur. I didn't mean a slur by
No.
You know, it's just that's the way I.
That's Charlie. That's Charlie Pierce's phrase, and it just sticks. It works so well.
Okay, well, I'm going to toss it back to you guys, but that's just been something that's been in my crawl ever since I tuned into Washington Journal on Wednesday. So
yeah, I mean, you know,
no, you've joined Good Todd in the Washington Journal cadre.
You know, I almost called in, Bob. In fact, I tried, but I couldn't get through. Just to tell these morons, look, a memo is the same thing as a police report from an FBI agent. But
yeah.
And a ticket is nothing more than a memo. I mean, before they had dash cams, of course, that's all you had to go by was the officer's, you know, observation of what took place.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing is, you know, these sorts of memos are, they're kind of like CUIA memos because Comey was reported to have been very uncomfortable with the conversations that Trump had with him and Trump's inviting him to the White House and to dinner and all that stuff. And so these are the kinds of things, the kinds of records you keep just in case something goes south, then you have them at your disposal. You know, that, and you know, that's another reason you do these sorts of things. I mean, Comey's an experienced attorney. He knows a hell of a lot more about what's proper and what's not proper than Trump ever will. And so he knew what Trump was doing was not proper. It also made him feel uncomfortable. And, I mean, why would he reveal that after just one, you know, why would he have, you know, he really has his incentive to spill the beans occurs once he's no longer, you know, the FBI chief, basically. I mean, why do it sooner? You know, it wouldn't make any sense. Plus, he wanted to build a case. He wanted to show a pattern and practice of obstruction on the part of Trump, you know, because I think the guy... He probably regrets that press conference on October 28th of last year, which basically made Trump president, in my opinion. And he doesn't like Trump. He realized what, you know, havoc he's wreaked. And, you know, he maybe wants to get rid of Trump now, you know. So, you know, no, there's nothing at all improper about what he did and the timing of, you know, releasing it only after he was fired because... Because firing is one of the acts that constitutes obstruction of justice. That's, I guess, you could call the coup de grace, so to speak. You know.
It's
so there you go.
Perfect. And you have built many cases, I'm sure, being a lawyer. And one thing you're not going to do is give away your ace card. I mean,
no.
That's foolish.
No, you know, like as a defense attorney or even as a government attorney, you save some stuff for, you know, for let's say, you know, not your case in chief necessarily, but to rebut the other side's case, you know, just in case you need it, you know. So, yeah, there's a lot of strategy involved, and, you know, it wouldn't have really made sense for him to go to make the first memo public at the time it occurred, because, you know, it's like, well, you know, Trump could always explain it away.
Yeah, but see, there's one other factor here, Rick.
Okay.
And that is, when you know what you're doing, I mean, and this, you know, this goes to Trump's basic personality. Trump thinks, and we've discussed this in the past, that he is genetically better. He's an Uberman, okay?
Right. Right.
He's genetically better than everybody. He's smarter than everybody.
Right.
Because he's Trump.
Yeah.
But when you're, even if it's just to maybe wander off into Steve's realm a little bit, even if it's just insurance company counsel and plaintiff's counsel going at each other in a red car, blue car collision case, you know, just personal injury.
Right.
They still memo the file.
Yeah, sure.
And so if Trump had any brains, he would have had a memo too.
Sure, of course.
Because it is possible in these circumstances to get into a battle of the memos to challenge recollections.
Absolutely.
To see, you know, who's got the better memory of the event.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't, and that's why you get that
apes.
Oh, jeez. Well,
because that was supposed to.
I don't think anybody really believes that Trump has tapes because he put it in quotes, you know, in his tweet. But I mean, I think what you said, that, you know, Trump thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. I mean, he's clearly got a serious case of what, the Dunning-Kruger.
They're going to rename that the Trump syndrome by the time it's done. No offense to doctors Dunning and Kruger. I'm sure there's a long, fancy disease after it wiped out a bunch of American Legionnaires at a convention.
Sure. It's Legionnaires' disease. It's caused by Legionnaires, basically, also. It's his varied person. There are a number of personality disorders going along with Trump, and part of it is narcissism that causes him to behave that way. And I could go into a variety of others, but I think the overwhelming one is his narcissism. It makes him think that he's so much superior to everyone else, that everything that he does and thinks is far superior to everyone else's actions. So, yeah. Sorry about that.
No, that is totally incompetent. That's the thing. That's the irony about it, because, you know, it's the exact opposite of what he thinks. I mean, he saw
that's true.
Reality.
That's what it is. People who are narcissists are out of touch with reality, because their reality is themselves. They believe themselves to be far superior, no matter how they are in real life. They can be the absolutely worst at everything, but as long as they believe that they are the best, I mean, that's what it goes back to with narcissist, the original, you know, where the term narcissism comes from. You know, narcissist was the, was he a semi-god, I believe it was?
Narcissus was a nymph or a dryad or a hamadryad or something like that. And he was so enamored of his own reflection that he wound up turning into like a,
He was cursed. He was cursed. One of the gods became so enraged with him that he turned him into a narcissus.
Which I guess in the long run is better than being turned into a newt.
Yes, I suppose it is.
So on a more frivolous note, I have the pleasure on Sunday night of seeing you two play live at the Rose Bowl along with the Lumineers warming up. So that'll be fun.
Oh my, how sweet.
Yeah, I'll be going with my son. So
that's good.
Didn't have any Soundgarden tickets, I trust?
No, I did. I didn't have any Soundgarden tickets, and boy, that was a shock to hear what Chris Cornell did. You know, who knows? I mean, the guy was obviously in a lot of pain. You know,
pain is a very strong driving force. Pain is not managed properly in this country. They talk about opioid addictions and they talk about narcotic addictions. You want to hear an interesting story? Indiana is trying to pass a very, very high nicotine or cigarette tax right now. And I received a call here several weeks ago about this tobacco tax. And this woman was all haughty on herself, and she starts out the conversation about, did you know that the most effective way to stop smokers from smoking is to increase the tax on cigarettes by, it's like a dollar something per pack. And did you know? And she was going through all of these ridiculous facts. And one of them that she presented was she said, did you know that people who are addicted to opiates and heroin started out as cigarette smokers? Oh, my.
The new gateway drug. Yeah.
Oh, my.
And you know what the proper response to that always is, Jules?
Oh, wait.
Did you know that listening to a self-righteous person is like licking a mongoose's ass?
Oh, well, no, I let her go through a little tirade. And she said, did you know that tobacco companies are pouring more and more money into the state, into our state, to increase the sale of their product to minors and this and that and the other? And I went through a tirade of my own. I said, did you know that tobacco companies are pouring more and more money into our state to keep vaping products from being able to be purchased at reasonable rates and to actually across the United States, because they are trying to make it harder and harder for vaping products to be used in the United States, although European countries have found them to be quite effective for harm reduction across the board and to help people to stop smoking cigarettes altogether. And that is quite a shameful thing, because other countries, more civilized countries, actually do studies on these things and actually find that that is a more productive way of reducing harm of cigarette smoking rather than increasing the cigarette tax. I said, and did you also know that your little facts about the opiate and heroin addiction is absolutely a fallacy? I said, the reason we have opiate and heroin addiction problems in this country is because we have a lack of education. We have a lack of funding in the proper areas. We have a lack of actual pain management in this country. Our pain management system absolutely sucks. It is absurd. Doctors do not know how to manage pain in this country. They are not educated properly. If we had proper pain management in this country, perhaps we would not have opiate and heroin addictions in the first place. We need to start educating our doctors, not putting on the patients. I said, and did you know that exactly everything that you said is a fallacy? You need to go back and educate yourself and perhaps present a better presentation and get off your kick about raising the cigarette tax, because that's not going to stop anyone.
Well, I mean, we've got a higher cigarette smoking rate in West Virginia than probably just about any other state anymore, and I am not going to be the guy who defends the tobacco companies, because personally, I'd like to take the CEO of RJR and Altria and companies like that and strap him to a chair and fire them up with a nice, nice, tasty dose of heroin every few hours and until they're real good and addicted, and then take it away.
Oh, yeah. I didn't defend the tobacco countries. And at the end of my little tirade, I said, was there anything else that you wanted to say? Did you have any questions? Because I'll tell you what, you can write my number down, and if you have any further questions, I would love it if you would call me for the proper information instead of the information that you're being fed, ma'am.
See, this is how I know you're younger than me, Jules, because
you're willing to let people like that steal time from your precious finite life.
Oh no, I didn't consider it stealing.
Oh, but
I
it is. It is. You're not going to get any more
in their face.
You're not going to get any more.
I absolutely enjoy it.
And they're getting paid. They're not true believers. They're reading a script. So, you know, it's just whatever interval of time before the computer dials the next number. And
I absolutely enjoy some of the reactions I get. You know, what I really enjoy is when I can, you know, the people from the insurance company, when I speak to them, in specialty departments, the people that are really dedicated to their job, not the people in the customer service outlets, but the people who from the specialty departments are really dedicated to their positions, when I can get them to start crying.
I guess we all need a hobby.
Yeah. That's you know, that's when I know I've got them questioning their jobs.
Bob, your story about getting one of these cigar company executives and, you know, in a chair and giving them a regular dose of heroin reminds me of a show. I don't know how long it was on TV, but basically that's what happened to like a cigarette executive. They were like kidnapped by somebody who basically made them, you know, injected them, I guess, with like nicotine to the point where it was almost like toxic. I don't know if it was Criminal Minds or maybe it was an episode of Criminal Minds or something like that, but you know.
Well, I obviously missed my calling.
Oh, you know, interesting fact is that nicotinoid receptors in the brain, they are doing studies on nicotinoid receptors in the brain and Alzheimer's disease and dementia. Using nicotine, I think it's an inhaled version of nicotine, not tobacco, obviously, from tobacco, but Minecrafting puzzles. And they are finding that using the nicotine helps the nicotinoid receptors in the brain rewiring with Alzheimer's and dementia patients. And the Minecrafting games or puzzles help in the delivery of information, and it is helping with slowing the process of Alzheimer's and dementia. Neat fact, Ty.
Well, I can tell you one thing. I haven't seen anybody quit smoking around here because of the price of cigarettes. What they do is they buy the cheaper cigarettes or they move down to hand rolling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. But the body has nicotinoid receptors that actually receive nicotine. So it is used in the body for something. I'm not encouraging smoking at all, but there is, you know, something in the body that does use it. And scientists are finding that it can actually help with dementia and Alzheimer's. Just a neat little fact.
Yeah. I need to send out thanks to Gary. Thank you, Gary. We are on our way to, what might turn out to be a Friday on the Front Porch Miracle, courtesy of the Horn Family
Excellent.
Community Congregation. We are down to $315 to go, and that's a whopping good, whopping big load better than $460, believe you me. So, you know, we got about an hour and 4 minutes. Maybe we can get this down to where it's at least bearable come more in Monday. So thank
Amen,
you, Gary.
Brother.
Thank you very kindly.
Miracle, miracle, miracle. Let's do it.
Need a miracle. Reminds me of my days wandering around Grateful Dead parking show parking lots. Need two tickets. Need a miracle. Two tickets. Need a miracle.
Come on, give us a miracle. Let's do a roll here. Right?
Deadhead, Bob.
Who asked that?
Me.
Yes, I was a deadhead. I guess I still am. I mean, do you ever become an ex-deadhead?
No.
No, it's like an ex-Marine. It doesn't happen.
Well, it's kind of like being a mobster. You give your oath of, you know, muerta, and you're a mobster for life, right? Except in a good way.
Yeah, and you know, and I mean,
I ate some of the best grilled chicken I've ever had in my life in parking lots before dead shows. Some of the sketchiest food you can ever imagine, but damn, it was good. You know, special marinades. You know, I particularly was fond of the patchouli marinated chicken. I mean, yum yum.
With patchouli oil.
Yeah, it's a joke, Sparky. Everything's just you're you know, under the if the circumstances are right.
Hey, you gotta,
at a dead show, everything tastes like patchouli because everything smells like patchouli.
I just vaped some green buds, so give me a break.
No, there is one way to stop being a deadhead. And of course, this is an old joke. What happened to the deadhead who quit smoking pot? He looked up and went, "Man, this band isn't very good." Now I'll get emails from the deadheads.
Boo.
So what do you want?
Speak.
I never made one of their concerts, but I did some weird shit back in the day.
I've probably been to over 20 of them.
Speaking of smoking, Vermont's about to become the next nation with legalized pot. We passed a law in our Senate that...
Are you actually going to get to smoke it, or is it going to be stupid like West Virginia, where you can only buy a pharmaceutical pot pill?
Vermont and another state up in there in the New England. What was it? Vermont and
New Hampshire.
There are two states. Yeah, New Hampshire, I think it was.
In Vermont, you'll be able to own up to 2 plants and have 2 ounces on yourself at any one point if you're over 21. And I think the bill went to the governor. If he doesn't sign it, which would be the chicken shit to do thing, it will pass automatically. I think in like 4 days. If he vetoes it, obviously it won't. And if he signs it, obviously it will. So we're looking to see what happens, but it looks like very possibly we'll be one of the next 2 states.
Well, welcome to the club. It took you guys long enough. I could say
I don't partake myself. But I know what, I don't partake myself, but other people do. But hey, it's inevitable. It's gonna be nationwide eventually here.
Yeah, all kidding aside, I can't because I'll barf up a lung from the coughing, and that's not good for my spleen.
No.
And I weed was always a social thing. And so I don't get anymore the idea of like eating a dope lollipop than I do swallowing a pill for fun. I'm not comparing opioids with cannabis or THC. I'm saying that just sitting in a corner licking a sucker doesn't make
sense. You've never had a fentanyl lollipop, have you?
And I hope I never have one, but I can tell you here and now I'd rather see than be one.
Oh no, fentanyl lollipops are quite nice. Quite relaxing, actually.
I'll pass, thanks. The times that I've had to have pain medication for my gut when it was the only way to get through a night. I didn't like it at all, especially the next day, because I just felt like I was kind of all fogged and hazed out. I mean, a good righteously earned hangover is one thing, but that, no thanks. Hey, Sparky.
And the dreams are crazy.
Oh, Jesus. The Samuel Taylor Coleridge Memorial opium dreams? Yeah.
Gosh.
And the thing is, stone cold sober, I go to the mind movies every night. It just gets weirder with pain medication.
You know, Bob, get a pencil and write those down. You never know. You might
because then if I
letters,
wake, if I sit up and write my damn dreams down, then I'm up.
All right, go to Spark, man. Sorry to
interrupt. Sparky, I was going
to
ask you. I mean,
remember to ask me about Thailand.
Oh, well, yes, absolutely. Things you can do in Thailand.
Well, you can go see a tapioca plantation if you were where I was.
Is that anything like a beefsteak mine?
No. I mean, it's a plant. It's a weird plant. I mean, when I first saw them, I thought, are those pot plants or something? He goes, no, those tapioca fields.
Never did develop a taste for tapioca. It felt like eating pudding with frog eggs in it. I didn't get the fascination.
I used to like it. Or you can go to the top of a mountain where there's a Buddhist monk monastery and hang out with the monks.
It's
pretty cool. But you got to be really stoned on Thai stick to do it, because otherwise it doesn't give you that happy feeling. Or you can go to a city that has a monkey temple and feed the monkeys.
That could be fun. You know, you're not saying any of the things that I would expect a veteran to say you can do in Thailand, Sparky. Were you just a very, very well-behaved airman? Is that what you're telling us?
No. I'm not telling you that at all, but New Land, the place where I went, doesn't exist anymore. You got to remember, Thailand had 7 Air Force bases during the war.
Right.
And then there was an army base near us that had a naval docks to unload bombs. And we had another place that's still there is Pattaya Beach. It's not the same as when I was there now. I mean, but it was going strong then. European tourists used to flock there. You can go on Thai boats, or you can go on a canal cruise in Bangkok. I did the temple tours.
Oh, the temple. There's one. Oh.
I went and saw the reclining Buddha.
Did you go? What is that? What's it called? The Temple of the Dawn. The Temple of Dawn, in Bangkok.
I may have. I don't remember.
Thai stuff.
I remember the reclining Buddha, because it's all gold, and it's huge. I mean, it's huge inside this temple. And you walk down. There's a little walk ramp, and you walk from the feet to the head.
Cambodia was a dodgy enough place that you never got to see Angkor Wat, though, did you?
Oh, no. But I was only 70 miles from the Cambodian border. Now, we didn't want to go there. We just finished bombing it before I got there.
But I was gonna ask you about something semi-serious.
What's that?
Are you following this business about Lawrence O'Donnell's contract being up?
I've heard about it, but
his contract expires on June the 4th, and smack dab in the middle of having the best ratings MSNBC's ever had, they're not running out there to go, "Hey, Larry, let's re-up."
Trump wants him fired, Bob.
Oh, I'm sure, and you know what? You know who would go really great there in that slot?
Who?
Bill O'Reilly.
Oh,
my God, puke. You're joking, right?
Well, I mean, come on, look what they've done. You got Megyn Kelly. NBC's hired
Greta.
Megyn Kelly. You got
Greta.
You got glass-jawed Greta. Wait a minute. Yeah, that's for you, Steve. There's one other intolerable freak from Fox. Remember, I bet when O'Reilly was fired that there would be a period of time for things to calm down, and then he would be hired by MSNBC.
Now, I watched Lawrence.
Phil Griffin.
I watched Lawrence, and then I turn it off. I can't stand watching the 11th hour of Brian Williams.
Oh, I watched that a few times when I was in D.C.
Don't make you want to puke.
Okay, here's one. And this is creepy. This is super duper creepy. Marty just said, my money's on Hugh Hewitt. And what an unbearable prick that guy is. I caught him this afternoon saying, well, you know, Comey better have some memos about Obama, too, or else it'll look like he was out to get Comey. So you know, because, you know, he gets the memos and memo. He gets the talking points. That's what it's going to be by the Trump dead enders. Well, Comey was out to get Trump. That's why he wrote memos. See, he doesn't have any Obama memos. Where's his Obama the Kenyan Muslim memo? Everybody knows he's a Kenyan Muslim. Where's his birth certificate memo?
Well, if they get rid of Lawrence, Rachel won't have anybody to throw to that can have the conversations they do.
Oh, no, I think it'd be kind of fun to watch. I don't want this to happen. But and Hugh Hewitt's coming up next. Hey, Hugh. Hey, Rachel. Eat shit and die, you right-wing turd. Yeah.
Why the hell would they even have Hugh Hewitt on MSNBC, Bob?
Because when Comcast bought... never mind. Anyway... Phil Graham has
I know all about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, Phil Graham has a hard on to try to foxify MSNBC.
Scarbo, I can see, because he kind of will push back at times, you know.
They've been screen.
He doesn't have any competition.
They've been screen testing Hugh Hewitt on Morning Joe for a while. And it's, ugh. Just, ugh.
Bob, you asked a question earlier tonight, and I may have an answer for it. We may have to get Billable Rick in on this if he's still around. But you asked, how would we remove Trump if he was impeached? Isn't that done by the Sergeant of the Arms? He would just go in there.
Nobody knows. It's never been done.
I know one thing about Lawrence O'Donnell, he stopped doing Facebook Live.
Hmm.
For some reason. He was doing it all the time.
Is that like a separate show he was doing on Facebook Live or what?
Yeah, after his show was over, he went on Facebook Live.
Oh, I see. Okay. So he would like...
Well, they probably made him do that, made him stop because people were continuing to watch him instead of watching the unwatchable Brian Williams
That show is horrible.
Well, it is, and it's horrible. Yeah, it's horrible because he's got the same old tired old retreads on there that really add nothing to the conversation.
And he has no credibility. His credibility shot after that false story he put out about what did he say? He jumped out of a plane or something and.
No, I'm being shot at in a helicopter.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. But Rick, you're on there now. How could they remove Trump if he was impeached?
Well, again, as he'd have to be removed from office by the Senate, I suppose the
we're talking post conviction here. That
no, we're talking post conviction. I suppose you could get a. Boy, it's not like it's a formal judgment of convictions. It's not like you could go have a U.S. Marshal remove him from the White House.
You raised that. Because the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court serves as the trial judge,
mm-hmm.
That could indicate, I mean, that would at least give him access to the U.S. Marshals, would it not?
Yeah, I suppose he could issue a, you know, like a notice to vacate the White House or something like that, or, you know.
And then what happens if Trump says to some loyalist generals, shoot on sight?
Well, then I'd say we have a civil war, Bob, if that happens.
Well, no, I mean, I'm not being a smartass here.
No,
it's not in the Constitution.
No, I realize that.
And didn't Andrew Jackson create a similar situation or a parallel situation?
Well, he refused to obey a Supreme Court order that invalidated the Indian Removal Act, and he basically
Mr. Marshall has rendered his order. Now let him enforce it.
Mm-hmm.
And then just went ahead with the genocide.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, the upshot of it is the Supreme Court has no enforcement mechanism. It basically depends on the goodwill of the other branches of government to enforce its orders, essentially. And so if those other branches, you know, don't have goodwill, like, for example, Trump, if he gets, you know, impeached and removed from office, then, you know, that would create a whole a whole other problem. And what if the Trumpanzees surround the White House to prevent, you know, any kind of removal of Trump from the White House, you know?
Okay.
I've thought of that, too. Go ahead, Bob.
And here's the next step. He can federalize National Guard forces. Posse Comitatus says that he can't use the military for law enforcement inside the continental United States. But he could federalize. The Trumpiest National Guard in the United States would be the West Virginia National Guard. Let's say he federalizes the West Virginia National Guard, the Alabama National Guard, the Kentucky National Guard, the Georgia National Guard, and the Tennessee National Guard to prevent him from being removed from office. Now, I know some people are going to think, you know, that this is just out there.
Yeah, but everybody in the military takes an oath, Bob.
This whole administration has been out there, Bob, so I don't think anything you say is going to be, you know, that strange.
But Duncan raised a good point. So,
well, that's true. But what we don't know, and we've talked about this long before Trump even came into office, with the presence of the Oath Keepers out there and with the number of military members of which we can't be certain who may have signed on with that bunch, and with the number of Trumpanzees in the military, I don't know how well that oath holds up.
But considering Trump's ego, don't you think he would resign before it came down to, okay, you're getting the boot, dude?
Personally, I don't.
I've heard conflicting statements upon that. There are a lot of people, biographers, that have wrote biographies about him that said he'd never allow himself to be the first president to be actually removed.
Yeah, they had a guy on, Randy had a guy on who has studied up extensively.
Yes.
And actually, that was a biographer.
Yep. But, you know, Bob, Mr. Kincaid could be right as well. He's been right a lot in the past. I mean.
Well, he was right about Trump winning the election. Nobody else thought that was going to happen, you know.
I gave it a 20% chance.
And just recently, it was only a few nights ago, I said, the Republican Congress would take that as an opportunity to run and hide from any significant investigation. And lo and behold, there was Lindsey Graham saying the very damn thing yesterday. That magic eight ball with the cracked screen that says answer hazy, ask me again later, is pretty goddamn good when you get right down to it.
Yeah.
Oh, and I've got an announcement to make. Thank you very kindly to Henry. We are $215 to go, Steve, and Ms. Karen, and Cletus, and Twiggy. They're such good puppies. $40. The next $40 that come in will be matched by an offer from the aforesaid Steve, Karen, Cletus, and Twiggy. And that'll take us down to only $135 to go. And with 43 minutes to go in Friday on the Front Porch, we will be staring another Friday on the Front Porch miracle right in the kisser. So thank you, Steve, and thank you, Karen. And thank you, Henry.
We can do this, Bob.
Pardon?
We can do this.
I hope we can.
Did you use the lottery ticket, Steve?
Yeah, part of it. Yeah, Karen hit a scratch off last night.
Woohoo!
But, and let me ask you this, Bob. Who do you think that there was a Washington Post or a New York Times or some article come out today and said there was another high-up official that is involved in this mess? Do you think it's Rance Priebus? Do you think it even goes even higher than
I
that?
I know who I want it to be.
You want it to be Pence.
Jared.
I know.
Jared.
No.
He wants it to be Pence, don't
nope.
you, Bob?
No, Pence is already up to his eyebrows.
Racist Bannon.
No.
Who?
I want it to be Ivanka.
Ah, there you go.
Already knew you were going to say that. You have heard word on the street is that Bannon, Pence, and Spicer are gone, right?
Well, Bannon's on a plane to Saudi Arabia right now.
No. I mean, out the door.
No. I knew what you meant, but yeah, he's. I've heard all of that, but do you know why I want it to be Ivanka?
The daughter.
Because she's way too deep in the administration.
No.
She's the hereditary heir to the Trump, you know, presidency, let's just say.
I do not want her to be our first woman president.
I've heard you say that, yep.
True. Touche. Wow.
But, you know, we're all dreaming here. We're kind of projecting beyond
Steve, we're not dreaming. We are. The second word you used was the right one. We are projecting from a known set of circumstances into possible futures.
Don't you remember, I do, Bob, how long the Nixon impeachment took? My gosh, that went on for forever. I can remember.
How old were you back then?
Me? I was probably 7 years old, and I was pissed off because I couldn't watch the Flintstones, you know. I remember calling the TV station and raising hell and saying, stop this Watergate nonsense. It's boring me to death. Put on the Flintstones, you know.
Well, I had a mom and a dad who sat there with me and said, watch this. And of course, my mom and dad talked politics. And so it made them interesting.
Dad worked, and mom was just doing her thing. So I was kind of a TV child, you know, left to my own devices.
And my mom was deep into genealogy, thanks to my grandmother. And so she went lickety-split into the family tree and found out that that her side of the family was distantly related to John Dean.
But do you think due to, you know, the communications, the way everything is sped up tenfold, that it's going to happen quicker this go around?
No, it's not. Okay. Especially because the Senate and the House are going to stop doing their jobs.
Well, they're the wheels of justice.
They're all going to sit around waiting for Mueller to do his thing.
And the wheels of justice, I don't care, you know, who you are, they crawl.
Well, as our buddy Jim pointed out on a number of occasions, the wheels of justice grind exceeding slow, but they grind exceeding fine.
I had a flashback moment.
There is one question I've got, and that's this. What impact does this have, does Mueller's appointment have, what effect does it have, and maybe you know, Rick, on the ongoing work we know that's already being done by the grand jury in Alexandria, Virginia?
I would think that he's going to assume control over that, Bob. Over that grand jury and that whole proceeding. I don't see how it could be any other way.
So do you start all over again, or do you pick up where they are, or do you refocus the investigation?
What you do is you pick up where they are and you sort of try to streamline things. You have to, you know, be like the umbrella over all the existing investigations that are at least going on a grand jury level. So yeah, I mean, it'll be, it won't be a problem. Mueller was the U.S. attorney for the Northern District of California way, way back, like, you know, 40 years ago or whatever, you know, 35, 40 years ago in the 70s.
And this may creep some people out, but Mueller comes to the investigation from a law firm that has been engaged in the representation of Jared and Ivanka.
Right. Wilmer Hale. It's one of those, what do you call it, the white sock
silk
firms
stocking.
Or whatever? Silk stocking firms. Yes, yes, exactly.
White, yeah, that's a white sock. It's a dirty, it's a dirty sweat sock firm. That's what it is. Okay, here's the next question. Why is this grand jury, I mean, it's not like they don't have grand juries in Washington, D.C. Why is the grand jury in the Eastern District of Virginia hearing it?
Huh. Well, maybe because of the connection to the, you know, national security apparatus. I don't know, Bob. That's where all the defense contractors are and what have you in that area. Around Arlington and so forth. You know?
It's also where the Pentagon is, isn't it?
Yep. Yep. And that's a counterintelligence. It's also a counterintelligence investigation. So that would, you know, stand to reason why they have it there.
McLean, Virginia.
Yeah.
I mean, aren't NSA and CIA both in that area?
Yeah, I think it's either McLean or Arlington. I'm not sure which, but yeah, they are. Yeah, exactly. All the alphabet agencies are there. I think not the FBI is in D.C. I think, and the
they are.
Yeah, but yeah, they, you know, NSA, the CIA, possibly the DIA. I mean, I don't know. You know,
they're all over there across the river.
Yep, yep. They're in Virginia for the most part, Northern Virginia. So, yeah, no, I think that's probably why they have it there. But you know, I don't know, Bob. It seems to me that this is going to go a lot quicker than Watergate, just because I think the targets, subjects of the investigation are really, it's like the gang that can't shoot straight. At least Nixon, there was a certain amount of professionalism to his, you know, thuggery and basically, you know, thievery, you know, his crookedness, you know. Whereas these guys just are so ham-handed, it seems like, you know. They just can't cover up their
stuff.
Well,
and they're, you know, atne ute aitbre if you one what I in me. I mean, really, when your attorney general is Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions Hood?
Yeah.
Meanwhile, right. Note, and I got a cowbell for Darlene here. Darlene has taken to referring to Ivanka simply as Ivy, which conjures up, you know, poison ivy, you know, the cartoon character.
Did
at least it does for me.
Congressman Cummings' statement to the press this morning.
Yeah. Yeah, he's not backing down, neither is Auntie Maxine.
She was on the Morning Schmo show, I see. I watch stuff on YouTube.
Yeah, that was yesterday, I think. But Darlene said, "I'm sorry, I thought it's a White House official that's being brought under investigation. I was not aware that Ivanka is an official. If so, what's her title?" Well, she doesn't have a title, but she's got
First Lady.
Well, no, she's not.
First daughter.
Assistant to the
She's
president.
In the First Lady's office, isn't she?
I know she's got an office. I
was under the impression that she took over the First Lady's office.
I hadn't read that.
Yeah, Jules is right about that, Bob. I remember hearing about that, and because Melania had no interest in basically.
Melania can't be in the White House in that position because of her. She can't pass the security clearance.
Oh, is that the problem?
Oh, because her daddy was a commie. No, wait. Was it because her daddy was a commie and her mommy was a commie? Or
no,
is it
cannot pass the security. It's her own credentials because the are disallowing her to.
Because she lied about how she got into the United States.
I have no idea. That's a possibility.
Because she took her clothes off to be photographed? No.
I have no idea what the reason is. I don't have those resources are not at my control.
I get the sense she doesn't even want to be at the White House, though, to tell you the truth. I mean,
I don't think she does either.
The longer she stays in Trump Tower, the happier she is, I think, to be away from that guy, you know?
Well, hey, yeah, it's not.
They're supposedly moving in here in a couple of weeks.
I'll believe it when I see it.
Yeah, she's supposed to move in as soon as Barron is done with school.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, but I'll believe it when I see it, you know?
Well, I am interested in this. I'm interested in the story that shows that CNN's reporting that, quote, lawyers in the White House counsel's office have consulted experts in impeachment during the past week and have begun collecting information on how such a proceeding would work. Well, that's all well and good, but there's no actual written handbook of impeachment. Impeachment happens, however, because it's not a criminal process. It's not even a legal process. It is a political process. And so impeachment happens, however, the leadership of the two houses determine it will happen.
Wouldn't it be better? Wouldn't it be easier just to get him to step down?
Yeah, if that was going to happen.
Well, why not just get him to step down?
Well, go do that, Jules.
Just I think I
go,
could.
Go give him a good talking to.
I think I could.
Give him what fur, as we say here in the South.
Give me 2 months, and I think I could. And I think I could figure out a way to get new elections.
No.
Yep.
No.
Approved by Congress.
It would have to be approved via a constitutional amendment.
I think I could do it.
And just how would you do it?
Because, and I think I could get Trump to step down as a hero. Because that's the only way he would do it.
A hero of what?
He said that the election was rigged, right? He said the election was rigged. If he agreed that the election was rigged, that would give... He doesn't want to be in office. He is finding that this is way above his head. He is not getting his social time. He is not getting anything that he wants out of this.
Can't get a decent burned-up steak.
He's getting the power, yeah, but he's not getting the time that he wants to have his social time. He's used to going out in the town every night. He's used to being able to do his funny business, not having to have, you know, the FBI searching him out all the time, you know, watching his conversations, doing all this other fucking shit, you know. He's not liking this shit. No, he's not.
Jules, you're right. I have heard that before. On
him. Yep. You can see the fucking nervousness on him every time he gets up and speaks. If you watch his little twitches and his little wrangles and everything else, he wants a fucking way out.
I have heard that before.
Fucking way out, and you soothe it through, and you take control of that, and you narcissists are the easiest fucking people to manipulate in this world. You put someone in there that can manipulate a narcissist and that can soothe all those other personalities. It's not that hard. It's not that fucking hard. I keep telling everyone, it's not that fucking hard. All you have to do is smooth it over. A group of people covered in honey through a fucking storm of hornets, and I've done it before by gold.
So what would that accomplish?
What would that accomplish? It would get him to step down. And the trick is, in order to do it, you tell the fucking sons of bitches in Congress, if you want to get rid of them, you're going to fucking do this. And you fucking bribe them.
Jules, I have heard theories that he would much rather be where Hillary is now, bitching about how his election was stolen from him, than actually being in the White House. No.
I've got a simpler solution.
He's a hero. He would say, I have done this. I am going to get you the election you deserve. I'm going to make sure those election boxes are not rigged. I'm going to make sure that America stands strong and stands true to her word. By God, and he is going to have, he's going to have fucking fireworks going. He's going to be the fucking hero of the world.
Forgive me, Jules, but this reminds me a little bit of brain writing in the other night saying that he voted for Trump because he's going to bring us all universal single-payer health care. It's deeply counterintuitive. I think that's the best. It's deeply counterintuitive. And there's no constitutional mechanism for ordering a redo for a two-year presidential election.
The easier way is the Supreme Court, by the way.
And the Supreme Court's going to do what?
Overrule the election.
The Supreme Court doesn't just do things. There has to be a case and a controversy, and there has to be ripeness for judiciation.
That can't be arranged.
It's a pretty tall order.
Not that tall.
Yeah, like, you know, all the way to space tall.
Yeah, that would be very difficult, Jules.
Nothing's difficult.
The Supreme Court does not, and tell me if I'm wrong, Rick.
Wasn't there a case already at the Supreme Court?
The Supreme Court does not offer advisory opinions.
I believe there was already a case up there.
She's deferring to the 2000.
Bush versus Gore?
Yes.
Well, that was supposedly
it set precedents.
No, yeah. There's no, the Bush versus Gore is not a precedent. The text of Bush versus Gore specifically says this case is not a precedent for anything.
And that was by design, Bob.
I don't care.
Well, Jules, you may not, but the court does.
It would still set in their mind.
And the election is over, and it has been certified by Congress and the Electoral College, and therefore the issue, from a Supreme Court standpoint, is what they call moot.
You'd be surprised. Anyway.
No, I really wouldn't. The fact of the matter is, the only thing that happens upon Trump's exit from office is that Pence or whoever is vice president, or if Pence and Trump go together,
yes,
then
I know.
The Speaker of the House becomes the President of the United States.
That's why you have to have a re-election. That's why Congress has to put a fucking bill through. That's why I said you have to.
Jules, a bill won't do it.
A bill would be struck down as unconstitutional by the Supreme Court, Jules, because, you know, that's contrary to what's in the Constitution as far as the election system, having elections every 4 years and so forth on the second Tuesday of November.
Mulligan re-election.
And then there's the problem of the Electoral College.
Well, what if in the meantime they're talking about getting rid of the Electoral College anyway?
Well, that would have to come via constitutional amendment.
Well, they just need to amend it.
And do you know how long that takes?
And do you
they need to get off their fucking asses and do their fucking jobs.
Well, you know what it requires? You'd have to get 3/4 of the states to ratify. I mean, it's not that simple. You know?
You've got to get wait. You've got to get
hanging out there.
Yeah, exactly. The Equal Rights Amendment since the 70s, but to get any amendment has to have the agreement of 2/3 of both houses of Congress, and then it has to be ratified. Is it 2/3 or 3/4 of the states, Rick?
3/4 of the states.
Yeah, so there's a 66% threshold in the Congress, followed by a 75% threshold in the 50 states.
Okay.
That means each legislature has to meet to consider it.
Okay.
West Virginia's legislature will not meet until January of next year.
Okay, well, that poses a problem. So, well,
Texas's legislature may not meet until January of 2018. Texas's legislature only meets once every 2 years.
Well, hell, it takes a fucking year for our elections anyway, so.
Well, the thing is, Jules, there is no quick fix. We're basically, you know, we're basically fucked until we can get the House back and, you know, get.
Well, at least get someone in the fucking White House that has a better job manipulating him and making sense of this than who is in there now. For the next two fucking years.
But you kind of got to live with it. We got to live with it because of the people who wanted to make America great again and the people who were too upright and moral to vote for Hillary.
I mean, there's a lot.
We've got a constitution. That's what the whole conversation about what happens in the event of the removal of a president was about. We've never done it. And it could very well mean absolute chaos for what this republic is. That was why I referred to. That was why I brought up Gaius Marius toward the end of the filibuster. Because certain doors.
I was on the phone with the heart monitor people because I have to wear this monitor for 4 weeks, and I'm having trouble keeping it sticking. So I didn't quite hear all of it.
No worries, but. The principle being that once doors have been opened that have never been opened before, what lies beyond them is anybody's guess. But when you are in a constitutional crisis such as we find ourselves in now, then
you take hold of the situation and you manipulate it the way you want it to go.
So just have a military coup.
You don't stand there and put your thumbs up your ass and wait to see what's going to happen.
Jules, I appreciate your passion, but do you are you just advocating extra constitutional action?
Well,
because once the Constitution's gone, I mean, it's Tinkerbell, okay? Once nobody believes in it anymore, it's over.
I'm not saying nobody, but perhaps sometimes you have to. I mean, it happens all the time. People take the matters into their own hands, whether it's constitutional or not, and they go outside of the Constitution and they deal with it. That's what Congress does all the fucking time.
Well, no, they don't. They haven't done it that for 200.
They don't do it on
for 240 years. The Constitution
outside of it when they make these fucking deals with these fucking companies and all this other fucking shit. You know as well as I do.
I have no idea what you're talking about, Jules.
Yeah, I'm kind of lost too, Bob.
Tax breaks.
Exactly.
We may not like them, they're constitutional.
Trade deals. Fucking arms deals.
Arms deals aren't
buying votes
by Congress
and forth. You think that's necessary? Directly within the Constitution?
Jules, it is. Okay.
Trying to make laws so that people can't protest.
Well, until the final arbiter of constitutionality is the Supreme Court of the United States. Period. Now, granted, you got people like Mike Huckabee. Who says that Marbury versus, and this is one of those darling talking points of the right, Marbury versus Madison was decided improperly. Well, that's the foundational decision upon which all of constitutional law rests. But the fact of the matter is, the Supreme Court of the United States is the final arbiter of what is and is not constitutional. Otherwise, the Supreme Court really has no purpose.
Making laws that are outright death sentences to the citizens of this United States.
You know what, Jules? What you're complaining about is the fact that they're in power and we're not.
All people are
not
created equal.
You're not talking about constitutionality.
All people are not created equal.
That's not in the Constitution.
I know. I'm just saying.
That's in the Declaration of Independence.
I realize that.
And the Declaration of Independence is not operative law in this, in any way, shape, form, or
fashion. I realize that. I realize that. But the founding fathers, what our founding fathers have said in the past, do not apply to what this country is now today.
I don't know what that means.
What that Constitution is based on means nothing to where we are today.
There's 240 years that say it does. Everything that happens in our government happens constitutionally unless declared otherwise. And there have been plenty of things that have been challenged on constitutional issues, and there have been plenty of stuff that was declared unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
The Supreme Court gets stuff wrong, it gets stuff right.
Yeah.
But the Constitution remains the bedrock. And to simply say that we should have an unconstitutional do-over election, that's dangerous ground.
I understand that. Okay? What I'm saying is that we need more maybe not flexibility, but this should be more of a living document than pen and paper written on. I don't know how to describe what I'm trying to say, but it's like the gun laws of this country are absolutely absurd. You know as well as I do.
The what ours?
The gun laws. The Second Amendment.
Oh, yeah. And you know what else is, you know, I've said a dozen times, a hundred times maybe, that our fetishized approach to the First Amendment is trouble and has gotten us to where we are. But you know what? It is what it is. And unless you want to maybe have an Article 5 convention of the states in which a majority of the states are controlled by right-wing Republican governments, and the minute you gavel that thing into session, the entire Constitution of the United States goes out the window. The whole thing, you know, not just the whole thing is up for grabs. Well, the Supreme Court has said, even in the Heller decision, that it is possible and it is legal to have certain rules and regulations regarding the possession of firearms. They haven't said that America, the practical effect may have been to turn America into a shooting gallery, but it isn't what they said. So we've got to learn to distinguish between not liking what the others are doing with the power that they have acquired versus thinking something is unconstitutional. And that having been said, I owe thanks, I owe big thanks to Kitty in Boston, who took care of half of Stephen Karen's challenge. So we got $20 more to go to meet Stephen Karen's challenge, which will take us down to, what did I say, $135? Yeah, $135 to go on a Friday on the Front Porch miracle with 14 minutes. Oh, we are going to make this one interesting, aren't we? 14 minutes to go in the program. $20 takes us down to $135, and then we see what happens after that. So thank you, everybody, who's jumped in this evening. You've made things a lot better than they otherwise were. James says secession may make it easier to pass an amendment. There's that.
If nothing else, I brought an interesting spin to it.
Well, I don't think I've ever heard you use the F.
Story, if you're interested.
Boy, yeah.
Yeah, stand by 1 second. 1 second, Sparky. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. Subject line, parliamentary democracy. Doesn't having a through with a vote at any time. The Prime Minister can ask the Governor General to dissolve both houses of Parliament in election. I've always wondered why the U.S. is so complex. Robert, the reason is because their most direct experience was with a parliamentary form of government in the form of the British Parliament. And as a consequence of that, and because they were enlightened, trying to come up with a better system even than that, they came up with this. And what want to simply let a parliament, and they had their own reasons for doing so, you know, I can never remember, I never have his name on the tip of my tongue when I need it, but Charles, 1918, 1917, the economic interpretation of the Constitution, and a lot of people have flung a lot of
Charles
muck.
Beard.
Charles Beard. Thank you, Larry. Hi, Larry.
Yeah, you asked me to read that and report back on it some years ago, and I never have.
You never read it and never read it or never reported back?
I never read it, never reported back, and I keep on thinking I'm going to do so at some point. You just reminded me. Okay.
Okay, well, Charles Beard, while he's had a lot of mud slung at him and a lot of vilification, the essential tenets that he puts forward, that the framers were acting in their own economic best interest, is really quite difficult to refute. So I guess that all goes to it. Glenn, by the way, rather GK gives you an A for effort, Jules. James says, Bob, you're right, but Jules has a point in that SCOTUS is political and should not be. We're required to abide by constitutionality, whereas the moneyed classes seem to be allowed to take in their legislative winnings and wait for years for that to be overturned. It's true. And, you know, that's a matter of our side simply not accessing and getting enough power to make the changes that we want. Take, for instance, getting the money out of politics. It's a great phrase, isn't it? Sounds wonderful. But what we're talking about is getting one side's money out of the politics. Because, as Bernie proved, you can raise a shit ton of money from people $3 and $5 at a time. Now, we don't want to get that money out of politics, now do we? It's worth thinking
about.
How can
we get the big money out of politics when they're the ones buying everyone out?
Welcome to capitalism. Look at that. Politics being capitalistic in a capitalism, in a capitalistic society. Yeah, Sparky, what did you have?
This weekend in Sacramento is the Democratic State Convention. And the progressives are primed to take over the state Democratic Party. I have a Facebook Utapau buddy from San Diego that's a delegate. He's there now. He's been posting that he was on his way.
Oh, is
probably get updates from him.
How's Roger doing? Roger Smith
moved to Oregon.
Roger Smith moved to Oregon?
Yes.
I didn't know that, of course, because I haven't been involved. Well, they're having their convention right now, the Democratic Party. So I hope everything goes the way the Bernie delegates want it, but I don't know what's going to happen. Okay.
Well, hopefully they'll be signed on board a universal health care for the state in their platform or whatever they do. I forget the name of the Senate bill. I keep getting notifications every day. And then we'll hear from our next governor, I'm sure, too, there.
You mean Gavin Newsom?
Yes.
Lead pipe cinch, is he?
Well, in my book, I'm voting for him. I don't know anybody that's running against him.
Yeah, he's the
Democrat.
He's the odds-on favorite. He's probably got to be like a 5-to-1 favorite or something like that, you know?
I get his emails like every other day wanting money.
Yeah.
Are you on his mailing list too?
I am. I've put him into my junk mail category because I don't have time to read them all. But yeah, no, I get him still. Yeah.
So that's happening out here.
Well, the big issue at the convention this weekend, and I'm not there, obviously, is the election of the new Democratic Party chair. So that's going on. And Eric Bauman is running. He's from Southern California, and I don't know who the Bernie folks are endorsing, but Eric Bauman is the big name.
Oh, and Jason jumped in. SB 562.
Yeah, that's it. Once you said it, I remember now. I get the emails to support that every other day too.
Oh, Jason also took Karen and Cletus and Twiggy and Steve's challenge down to $10.01, which will get us to $135, and then we'll see what happens with the overnight crew.
Who puts in $10.01?
Jason put in $9.99.
Oh,
so that leaves $10.01 to go.
These change people drive me nuts.
And there's a smart aleck out there trying to figure out if PayPal will take a one penny contribution, but they won't.
Oh, jeez.
By the way, Jason says Bernie delegate reporting from the Sacramento convention. Kimberly Ellis is the Democrat, is the Bernie-crat pick.
Yeah, that's right. Thank you very much, Jason. Appreciate it.
Jason says Bauman's going down.
Bauman's going down?
That's what Jason says.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll take his. He may be right. The Democratic Party is ready for some new blood, and we'll see what happens. I'm not there to vote. I'm not a delegate. I don't even know what the platform looks like. I have no idea what's going on the state level. And if I were involved with clubs, maybe some of the Democratic Party clubs, that's where the party gets most of its delegates, Bob, and everybody is through the Democratic Party club structure. But I'm not involved with that very much either. I'm as cynical and as frustrated as Jules. I just don't know what, I'm just beyond frustrated. I mean, I'm angry as all get out. I don't know what to do, and I just have pretty much tuned out.
I'm not cynical. I'm optimistic. I'm fighting.
Just be the ball. Chill.
Well, we have to fight. Let's put it, you know, there's an old joke out there, and I'll probably screw it up. But a civil engineer, a mechanical engineer, and an economist are stranded on a desert island. And some cans of food wash up, and they're on the beach, and they're all very happy because it means they're not going to starve to death. But only if they can figure out a way to open the cans.
No can opener.
To open the cans. And so the civil engineer devises this Rube Goldberg device where a coconut falls from a tree and lands on the can, but it goes splat and all the food shoots and it becomes inedible. So the mechanical engineer builds a fire and sets the can in the fire, but the can explodes. And again, you can't eat the food. They turn to the economist, and the economist says, hypothesize a can opener. Now, originally, that's a joke about economists. But it's also relevant here, because there's not much point in hypothesizing solutions that have no basis whatsoever in reality. We have to stick by the sign in the 12-step program meeting halls, reality spoken here. And we have to deal with the problems that confront us via reality. And that means we have to deal with the system that is in place, or else we confess that we're just done with the whole Constitution. And frankly, I've seen a couple of people that I really care about and who are very dear to me on Facebook say, you know, maybe a military coup wouldn't be so bad at this point. be terrible, because it would mean the end of the Constitution, because there is no process for a military coup in the Constitution or for military leadership of the United States. And what would follow immediately after that would be the absolute collapse of the American economy and the dollar, which would then lead to a worldwide disaster. And I don't think any of us want that. I'm just guessing. So that pretty much takes us up to the close of things. And it has been a rousing Jim Dandy Friday on the Front Porch once again. We got very near a Friday on the Front Porch miracle. Maybe in the next, minute and a half or so, somebody will show up with that other $10.01. So we will meet Stephen, Karen, and Cletus and Twiggy's challenge. And after that, $135 remains. So thank you everybody for joining in this evening. Wow, that's kind of interesting. Before we go. CNN reporting right now, Russian officials bragged they could use Michael Flynn to influence Donald Trump, sources say. There'll be 15 more stories by sunup. Kind of makes me miss Saturday morning cartoons. Because just because we have to deal with reality doesn't mean that sometimes we also don't want to escape it. And sometimes, you just want to hear Bugs Bunny say, he does not have to shoot you now, he can take you home and shoot you later. Or pronoun trouble. Or, what a maroon. Or any, you get the idea. So thank you, everybody. Thanks to everyone who spends your precious, finite time, something that is more precious than gold or platinum, diamonds, whatever, who spend your precious finite time engaged in whatever manner you engage in this program. Thank you to all of you, a significantly smaller number, I might add, who engage in keeping this program on the air. Thank you for all you do, not just for the horn, but for the whole horn community. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff at Week's End. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room, and thank you to Midweek Utility chat room moderator Steve from Georgistan. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And, of course, thanks always go out to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Good night, y'all, and have a wonderful weekend.